This episode's lead-in music features Gonzaga Professor of Entrepreneurship, Dan Stewart, a nationally renowned fiddle player. With more than 20 years of experience, Moira Rogers now serves as the study abroad director at Gonzaga. In this episode, she discusses the various opportunities available for business students to study abroad with GU.
Welcome. So happy to have you here. So today on the pod, we have Moira Rogers, originally from Buenos Aires, Argentina. Maybe we say Argentina, right? Who your current role is in study abroad. What's your title?
Director of study abroad.
Director of study abroad, right? And Gonzaga has a rich tradition in study abroad. I think we were probably one of the first universities in that space back in the 60s when, and there wasn't a script for it back then. The Jesuits just purchased, actually they didn't purchase, they leased a building in Florence and kind of set it up. But now we actually own a different location. But and specifically, we want to talk a little bit about opportunities for study abroad, and if we could, maybe a little more focus on business students, but it doesn't have to be just business students, because sure, a lot of folks listen to that. So glad to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
You've been a great friend and mentor over the years. So I always love seeing you. We don't see enough of you because we're kind of across campus.
It's always a pleasure.
Siloed here in Jepson. Stephanie, go for it.
So tell us about where the popular places our students are studying. Are they all going to Gonzaga and Florence, or are they going to other countries or other programs?
So about 55 to 60% of our students go to Florence. Then we have a large group. This is undergrads and grads. Mm-hmm. So we can talk about global business programs too than run in Florence. But then we have a lot of students who like going to Spain and a variety of other locations, like Zambia for a faculty led, or New Zealand for your American Indian master's program and entrepreneurship program. So yeah, there are a variety of locations, and not enough in Latin America and not enough in Africa. You know, but we're working on it.
I agree. And I've been really slow on, Moira gave me some great connections in Argentina and Ecuador, for that matter.
That's right. Yeah.
Are you building a course? Are you going to do a faculty?
Yeah, with you.
Yeah, I've been a little preoccupied with some other stuff as of late, but
yes,
it's on the list. This is the list right here.
That's great.
Yeah. So at some point,
And I would say, yeah, if I can add to that, is that the School of Business Administration is our biggest partner, and they are the one who send the highest number of students. And so we're always grateful and happy to partner with them. Just they're easy to work with when it comes to approving courses for undergrads, but they also run fabulous faculty-led programs. You know, for example, the MBA in Florence, or after that, they're going to New Zealand, you know, and working on entrepreneurship. And so it's really exciting to work with this school.
Can you explain a little bit about faculty-led? I mean, we have Florence, where we have a semester on what's effectively a branch campus of Gonzaga.
Yeah.
If we're doing a faculty-led, usually a shorter trip, is that?
Right, yes. Usually they are between 3 and 6 weeks, mostly 4. Most of the programs are 4 weeks. And so there's a whole proposal process. And because of the state of the world, we also do some training on risk management. And what do you do if there's a catastrophe somewhere where you are,
right,
which we cannot take for granted it's not going to happen. And we also see an increase in cases of mental health crisis. And so we want to provide some support so that not that you have to be a counselor now, but you have to know how to help a student get the help they need. And so, and then there's of course the academic piece, and we have a lot of proposals. We receive a lot of proposals every year. And for business this year, we have a program going to Japan. We have a program going to New Zealand, and some courses proposed for Florence as well for the summer.
It's exciting. So those 4 weeks, are they in country the whole time?
Yes, mostly yes. There are some programs that do pre-work at home and then integrate an immersion abroad, especially if they work with graduate programs, yeah, with graduate students, because they have more restrictions in the time they can spend away, yeah, from family and work, etc. Right? So it's flexible.
I did a faculty-led study abroad in my PhD at University of San Diego. I went with two Catholic nuns to Israel.
Oh,
yeah.
Wonderful.
I think that sounds like the best experiences of my life. So.
I can only. Yeah, that sounds like very good. I'd like to go on that program.
I would go again, but maybe not at this time.
Not at this time.
The timing was quite good.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. Yes, yes.
And so I know there's, you mentioned Zambezi or on the, that's Gonzaga in Zambia, I believe.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
Josh Armstrong does that.
That's right. Yes.
It's not necessarily business focused, but we've sent business students on that. Mm-hmm. It's more leadership / maybe some hard sciences in there, like biology, environmental science.
There are two programs that go to Zambia. And okay, so one is the one spearheaded by Josh Armstrong. And it's always a second faculty that goes. And then there's another one that is biology in Chimfunchi. So okay, you get it right, but it's two separate programs. And they go every 2 years.
Okay.
Goes every 2 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
And it's biology, yeah.
And I know what he's doing this summer is he's going to do the Camino de Santiago again. He's done a couple of them. So I went on a presentation where you're familiar with the Camino.
Of course. Yeah. Josh is. Yeah.
It's a.
They go on the walk, right?
Yeah. There's multiple trails you can take. Yeah. It looks awesome. It's kind of like the Appalachian Trail for Spain, but a lot more spiritual and a lot older, like thousands of years older. So yeah.
There is a program in the books, actually, if you're interested in leadership studies for the Camino de Santiago for next year.
Oh.
So that would be an interesting.
Well, maybe my friends in leadership studies.
Christine Hooper, there you go. Christine Hooper, talk to her. Go see her.
I know. No, it doesn't actually apply to faculty-led or anything.
We can change. Remember, we can change all that.
Yeah.
Those are human-made rules, right?
What do you think some of the benefits for a student are to study abroad?
Yeah, so one of the biggest benefits has to do with understanding themselves and their own perspectives. We often think that they are going to go and be doing this and doing that, but actually it's the moments of crisis or the moments when they encounter difference that leads them to think, oh, maybe I think, you know, differently from these people, or I don't enjoy this. And so there's a lot of value in terms of that transformation of the person, a lot of personal value, right? Yeah. But then, of course, there is developing global perspectives and networking with people if you're in business or if you're not. I mean, we don't live in this world without a network of fellow people who do the work we love to do. So it's a very important time to make friendships and to build relationships. And of course, there's the academic value of seeing how courses are taught differently and doing immersion. In our programs, most of programs have immersions built into them. So that's usually the highlight of the programs, when they get to see businesses or they get to see a farm or they get to see how mozzarella from Buffalo are made in Italy, right? And so, let me give you an example. The Buffalo are treated much better than the immigrants because they have their own, they have water beds and they play classical music for them.
What?
And they have a place where they can scratch themselves, right? Because the notion is that they will produce better milk and thus better, you know, mozzarella di bufala. And so that's kind of an interesting business model, right? When you are in business, right? And so
yeah.
I think that's sometimes something that people love.
So I'm looking this up online, and so you're saying they have like Okay, so they have like kind of ponds that they go hang out in because they're
No. It's literally waterbeds, and they milk themselves when they feel like it, when they feel uncomfortable, you know. So
sure,
it's a very interesting concept. As I said, you know, they get treated a lot better than many of the other visitors in the country, in our country too, right?
There was an advertising campaign probably 20 years ago. It said, happy cows come from California. And you'll have to look this up. I'm from Los Angeles, California.
Yeah.
I remember this, but it was, I think they were trying to compete with the dairy industry in Wisconsin, right? And, and trying to get people to buy more California cheese or whatever. But I think there's something to that premise, that same idea that happy cows produce, you know, better quality, just like job satisfaction at work. If we're happy
right.
at work, we're more likely to do good work.
That's right. And I think what I would add to what I said before is the ability to work with people who have a perspective that's different from your own yeah. and to be able to successfully navigate those differences and be happy while you
right.
do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the biggest value of a global experience, right? I mean,
yeah.
because you don't learn that in the from the textbook, right? And so...
I couldn't find any water buffalo beds or buffalo water beds, excuse me. But the happy cows from California, there was a lawsuit against them.
No.
The dairy farmers of Wisconsin sued the California Milk Advisory Board.
I told you there was a rivalry there. That's so funny.
No, I can speak. So I went to Florence as a student here where we had to go. We went for the full year. I shouldn't say we got to go for the full year. It was required. It was actually pretty incredible that we had an opening tour, which was Oktoberfest. Uh-huh. So you put a bunch of 19 and 20 year olds in Oktoberfest from America. You only can imagine how that works out.
But in Italy, like you didn't go to
No, we flew into Munich. We flew into Munich. The real deal.
Wow.
And then we did like an opening tour. We checked out places in Germany. And then we busted Florence. And then we did a Christmas tour.
Ooh.
And the traditional Christmas tour was to the Middle East. So you would have Christmas in Bethlehem.
Oh, wow.
Our year there was conflict.
Those were the days, yeah.
Yeah, right.
We
got diverted to Turkey, which I would describe as like a bus tour of central Washington for the most part. But there were still
some. So you didn't end up in Bethlehem?
Because fighting broke out.
Okay. See, when I went with the two Catholic nuns, we went to Bethlehem.
Just right to it.
We went to Catholic Mass, and it was in Arabic, and they told us it was about sin, and so it was great that we didn't understand it.
Yeah, that's right.
They had jokes. It was great.
It's a typical Mass, so it's And then we had an optional cruising tour where we did Kenya, Tanzania, and then you could add on Kilimanjaro.
Oh, wow.
It's like a that's full 10 months. It was crazy. I did do all that. Yeah, yeah.
Good job, Andres. Yeah. That explains.
Yeah, yeah but my point is, you know, right, I'm a kid from middle class Spokane.
Right.
Very white, as you can see. So not a lot of hardships growing up, but really eye-opening just how people think and approach everything differently. Life, how they approach life differently.
Yeah.
The pace of things was so nice for me because I'm just like running around like a crazy man when I'm here.
Yeah.
And then, we can chill out and have a cappuccino. That's okay.
Yeah.
We'll get there. That's why I was late for the podcast.
I was channeling.
That's why I was late, Moira. I was channeling what I've learned abroad.
You didn't want to be late, right?
It's your department's fault. So
But our current Florence program, they travel quite a bit too, don't they?
Yes, they have immersion. They have a lot of immersion experiences built into the courses, and those are sometimes the highlight. English for pasta. So they go and make pasta, and they learn English as they do with families, you know, and so usually those are some of the highlights of their learning experiences, right? And but they also have tours that they build with a certain content to various locations. For example, there's one that's usually very well attended that is to Auschwitz, right, and to Poland. And that's a very interesting experience. They go as a group, and so they have everything provided to and also help them, you know, navigate the environments, right? And so... So those are built into the programs. That's for the semester undergrad. For the faculty, they help faculty build the immersion components. So if you want to run a program there, there's a fabulous person there who will help you build all those components.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Believe it. maybe this person's no longer around, but as of about 10 years ago, it was an Auschwitz survivor who would go to the camp every day and answer questions for 2 months.
They still come.
Yeah.
There was probably another survivor, but that was very powerful. Yes, to listen to those stories.
Show you their tattoo and everything.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah.
But the flagship is Florence, and then there's something in Northern Italy as well, right? Are they doing like a up in?
The new program is in Trento.
Okay.
Yeah, and so that's an extension. That's a Gonzaga and Florence Trento program. We call it hybrid because it's not in Florence, but they now do the opening tour together, and the focus of that is usually on environmental studies. Okay. And there's a person who helps run that, Yuri Botura, and then there are faculty from here who go and teach their courses there.
Yeah.
So this year it's an environmental studies professor and a philosopher who's teaching ethics. Students always like to get their core courses out of the way. So we try to pair those on programs so that they can meet their requirements.
And I think Jason Houston, the dean in Florence, has been one of the greatest gets that Gonzaga's had in 2 decades. And he's been so fabulous.
Yeah, and we also do an internship program with the Department of Sports Management. They do. No, we don't do. We support them, but they do great work. And so they send students to learn about basketball at Pistoia. It's a town close to Florence within reasonable distance. And so our students go and help with marketing or with, they train a lot of the younger kids. And last year they also came, the youth came to Gonzaga to Hoopfest. And so that was fun. Yeah.
Yeah, they had a couple. I think they had
ten
came over. Yeah. Did they stay at your house? They stayed at someone's house.
The boys stayed at my house. I said as a joke, if you don't find it, they couldn't find housing. And I said, if you can, I have a boy who's now 30 in his 30s, right? So I said, I've had many boys in my life. If you need me to, I'm happy to. And as a joke, I said I ended up with, I think, 7 in my house. That was a little
fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was another faculty who hosted the girls.
Okay.
It was a smaller group.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when they launched that. Ryan Turcotte out of sports management kind of set that up. So, and then he's going to do some stuff over in Florence as well, I believe.
He's in Barcelona now, and he is interested in doing a Summer Olympics. No, Winter Olympics, excuse me.
Okay.
Winter Olympics, because they will be in Milano, very close to where we currently have to Trento, right? And so they're talking, I'm sure that there's more coming on that.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. So you mentioned Florence is most popular. Madrid has to be number 2.
Yes, it is. Yes, yes. Okay. Madrid is definitely number 2.
And we partner with the University of Madrid?
We partner with it's called IAU. And it is a provider. They work with an organization locally, but we also partner with the school, the SLU Madrid, San Luis University in Madrid, and those are mostly for engineering students. So we have a relatively large group there now. And for the undergrads, the Madrid version for the undergrads is mostly and all kinds of fields, and Spanish, but they don't have to have Spanish, which is not great, but it's what the students also prefer.
Right.
They can take Spanish and there are options, but it's not, you can take any business course or, any other discipline that you need.
And these are business courses offered by that university in English. So you have, you'll have European students in there.
No, they're only international students. Yeah, only our students. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a large group at the University of Auckland this year. Large for us, it's about 10 students who were there in the spring. I think they might still be there because the calendar is a little different. And so the interest in New Zealand is also growing. It's kind of very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's such a short plane flight. I can only imagine.
I know, right?
We were talking earlier about how you get from here to New York. So, that would be an interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
If you fly down to LA and then get a flight from there.
Right.
Yeah, we're also very excited about your program in Japan this year. Your program meaning it's a business program in Japan. So that's going in the next few weeks.
Who's running that or what's it about?
It is Tim Olsen and Daniel Shu.
Yeah. Okay.
Very cool. So they are. Yeah.
Very interesting. So you talked earlier a little bit about like support that you provide to prepare students and faculty as well. But what do you see as like some of the barriers that maybe a student wouldn't necessarily want to or be able to go to study abroad?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we often think it is mostly finance. It is a barrier, but there are also a lot of barriers that, you know, depending on the population. For example, if students have to work in the summer or they have to support their families, then it's very difficult for them to be away for 4 or 6 weeks or for an entire semester for that matter, right? And so a lot of them, I think one of the biggest barriers is the fact that people don't come from families that have a background or that have had experiences. I mean, for Florence, of course, there are people who have gone to Florence like Andrew and have been going back and the children will go to Florence, et cetera, et cetera. But the new population, like we have a lot of new diverse students at Gonzaga. The families have never been out of the country, maybe, right? Or they have, it's not a concept. And so a lot of it is, you know, thinking also that if you go, you're going to be behind. Often students tell me that you go abroad and then you go. We make every effort to make sure that whatever courses they take abroad will count towards their degrees. And so we always have to, and you know, dispel that myth, right? And so I think working with people who don't have that background and helping them understand the value of an experience is an important way of addressing that kind of barrier. It's more of a problem of imagination, right? Could I imagine myself there, right? That's not for me.
I agree 100%. It feels like it's a heavy lift until you do it. And then all of a sudden you're like, travel's pretty easy. You know, I got my passport. It's good for 10 years or wherever long it is, you know, and it's good.
That was my undergraduate experience. My parents said, we're not going to pay for study abroad. It's going to hold you back. You know, it's going to make you graduate later. And I was at University of Oregon on the quarter system. So there was something that directly transferred back the courses in business in Italy. But you had to go during the spring semester. And so you had missed 2 quarters. And so in that regard, it did feel like it was holding me back. So I went to the Copenhagen Business School in the summer and I took 2 classes and then I was ahead.
Right. Of course.
I think sometimes it's just not knowing what's out there, the possibilities.
Right.
And some of that old rhetoric of it's going to hold you back or
it's not for you.
It's not for you, or you don't speak Danish.
You don't have enough money.
Right?
And then there are scholarships, there are national scholarships. There's a lot of resources, right? Yeah. I'm not saying it's always easy, but we make every effort to support students to access scholarships that sometimes pay for the entire experience, you know?
Well, and I think as you talked about earlier, those moments in between, sometimes you can think, I'm very confident traveling abroad. And my parents took me abroad a couple times prior to when I studied abroad in Denmark. And first day I got there, I got lost and I just ended up in Sweden. And I mean, I had like a breakdown where I just like cried for like 10 minutes before I finally got to my dorm. And, you know, that moment, though, I think really shaped me to realize like how resilient I was and how I could, you know, do this. I could navigate a system in another country.
But, you know, what we have observed and is that often students confuse this cross-cultural discomfort that you just mentioned. Right. You're lost, you don't know where you are, you think you're never going to find your dorm, and something is terrible might happen to you.
Yeah.
They don't know how to distinguish that from a mental health crisis. So they'll say, oh, I have a mental health. My mental health is going down. And I mean, and I need to go home. And so they withdraw, right? Or one moment, because they are not used to, you know, the discomfort. So the cross-cultural discomfort is something that we address now explicitly. And we provide them also with some tools, you know, we have a handout with some ideas and things that you can do. So that you can, you know, if you feel that something makes you really uncomfortable and you don't want to touch it, you don't want to eat it, well, what do you do? How do you respond, right? Or what are some things you can do to stay healthy and happy while you are living in? And that's where alcohol is not always the best, right?
Right.
Usually most of our emergencies are tied to alcohol, excessive alcohol consumption, right?
Because they can legally drink in that country, where they may not be able to.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's like party time, right? But then they forget that the cons, they don't measure the consequences. So we try to make them aware of that and have a buddy system and all of that. But I think given today that we speak so much about, it's a lot more open also to mm-hmm. speak about a mental health challenge, right? Or mental health anxiety, etc., right? We like to provide them with some tools that they can use to say, oh, this is normal. Go talk to your friend and say, this made me feel strange and I don't know how to handle that. Or I don't like how this professor speaks. Or I didn't, at the restaurant, they were staring at me. I mean, sometimes they do.
Yeah.
Right. And so I once had a little kid who, I had a group of African-American students, and a little kid came and asked me if he could touch him. So he touched him and then he looked at his hand to see if it was stained. Huh? And the student was kind of upset, right? But it was the first time, it was in Germany, it was the first time this kid encountered a person of color face to face. And I said to him, no, this is his skin and it's all good. And he was super friendly to them too.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, both for the kid and for the student, it was an uncomfortable situation, but it was a great learning moment too. How kids develop a sense of safety about difference, right?
If I'm about to study abroad, let's say I'm about to embark on a ZAG, what's one or two things I should be thinking about?
You should be thinking about what you expect from your experience, you know, so choose in terms of location, in terms of the length of your program, in terms of, you know, the kind of experience that you want. If you want a group experience, you know, where you would have another 190 American students with you, or if you prefer to go on an exchange program where you'll be the only one having, you know, it's a lot more intense. Not everybody's ready for that, right? And so you should be thinking about all those logistical issues, and we help people do that. So on our website, there are a lot of resources to help start identifying. And then also, of course, you, if you're a student, you know, you want to make sure that you get credits for what you need. So we always say your first step, talk to your advisor, you know, so that they know that you know where what you do abroad will fit, and we don't send you to a program that makes you get behind otherwise, right? And so we have we now do info sessions about basics, study abroad 101. And then we do sessions about specific programs. And Florence also has their own sessions where you can learn everything you need to know. How do I apply? How do I, you know, what are some of the things I need to be thinking about? And so to guide them early in the process. And then it's more intense when you decide credit wise or academically or the location that you might prefer. So there's a lot of support.
Yeah.
We support students through those processes.
How many of our programs have students that do a homestay versus staying in a resident hall or dorm kind of situation?
That is a very good question. Yeah. We had quite a high number of students. Florence offers homestays, and the students who do homestays usually love it, right?
Yeah.
And so, but maybe there are 15 or so than do homestays. But then there's some programs that make it mandatory to do homestays. Madrid is a mandatory homestay program, and it's very hard to get. You can get away with a pension. It's like a dorm style housing option, but it's not always the case. So it varies. And a lot of the language programs also have homestays as a preferred form of housing. I'll say in Sweden, we send quite a few students to Sweden and to Denmark, and they do offer homestays, but they offer a variety of other options too. And they're outstanding in their how they do immersion experiences and take them out and help them connect the city with their learning and so on. And if you're with a homestay, they usually speak English, those families, you know. And it's not the case always in Spain or in Italy. So get the real cross-cultural experience there.
But that's how you truly learn a language. I mean, immersion.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Walk around in your...
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about you for a second? Your journey?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. you grew up in Argentina, and then you came to the States for college. Is that right?
For graduate school.
For graduate school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was that in Oh, with Georgia Tech or?
That was Virginia Tech for my PhD. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I first had been in Indiana for a master's. And so the idea was to study here and go back, but nobody prepared me for the experience. And so I thought people here are really weird. They don't, they don't just
go. Might be true too, yeah.
That was my first reaction. They don't come to your house. And I didn't have a phone. Imagine how long ago that was. I didn't have a cell phone coming from Argentina. Okay. You know, maybe 30 years ago, right? Yeah. And so that nobody talks to you because you don't have a phone, and so you cannot connect to. So the navigating the differences was tough, right? And so that was quite interesting. And so that somehow raised. And I also was told many times that some things would never be for me. You would never make it. You will never be able to. You will never, you know. For example, I was 27 when I started my PhD, and I was told so many times, "You're too old." And nobody will fund you. And I said, "Oh, really? We shall see."
Yeah.
So, and then I went and explored on my own and found all kinds of opportunities, right? So that.
Por qué no?
Por qué no? Yeah. Exactly. I said, I was take a no, but you first let's explore and see what's possible, right? And so that raised in me a desire to help students navigate all these differences and the systems that are so complex sometimes, and also the families don't have that background. So I've done a lot of that kind of work. I used to teach, and I used to teach at a university that had mandatory study abroad for everyone. Mm-hmm. So people would always fight over who does Guatemala because it was already organized. And I'd say, I'll do my own. And I did programs, for example, in Spain and Morocco to look at Christian Jewish Muslim interactions right after September 11, you know, so that was quite interesting. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot. I think the students often came because they like to take a picture with a camel. But hey, they still had to learn.
and you lived in Germany at one point.
I did do some of my graduate work in Germany. Yes, yes, that was before the teaching and the, you know, experiences in study abroad. So,
and you've been all over the U.S. What were the other institutions you were at before you came to Gonzaga?
I was at UNC Chapel Hill working in global health. Global health education, but I also was chatting with her that I work for an organization in California that also does global health education. So that was quite interesting. I ran all their Latin America programs.
Wow.
And I was in charge of reviewing the language programs and making sure the students got a real ethical and good immersion experience. So that was great. But I spent 70% of the time traveling, you know, so.
Wow.
Instead of in California. So that was quite interesting. Yeah. And I also worked at the University of Maryland in College Park, directing the Office of Study Abroad there. But let me say, I had about 5,000 students, and there were so many crises that I felt, you know, all I did was manage crisis. And I thought, I just don't want to do this.
Wow.
Because I've become a crisis manager or a risk manager, right? Or whatever we call it now, right? And so, that's when I decided to go work with a program that I would be in touch with the partners doing the programs, but also with the students. I love working with students. So that was a great, you know, a great fit for me.
I was going to ask you what the most rewarding part of your job is. Is it the students or other aspects too?
I think the most rewarding part of my work is when I see a student succeed who thought he or she couldn't, you know. For example, I had a student who was African American from rural Georgia, and she wanted to do a global rotation, but she was told, you know, her mother wouldn't let her put a foot outside the country, and she thought, I'm never gonna make it, you know, and then she did, and she had a great experience, and then became a big advocate of global health and equity and all that. And so it was it's also lovely to see when people can accomplish their dreams and then see the value of that and then be ambassadors for others, right? So those are the most exciting pieces. But also, let me say, when there is a crisis and you are in touch with families and with students that are struggling, and sometimes they are severe, to see that resolved in a relatively satisfactory manner where the student can be healthy and happy again. That is also a very rewarding, very, very nice to see that things get back to some normalcy.
We have a part of a podcast we like to call the speed round.
The what?
The speed round.
Oh.
I know, we didn't prepare you for this at all. So these are, I'm going to give you an either or.
Okay. All
and
right.
You just pick one.
Yeah. Okay? Yes. I can. I like to play. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. ¿Por qué no, Andrés? Yes.
Okay. Borges or Sabato?
Sabato.
Bergoglio or Prevost?
I don't know enough about anyone.
DVD.
No, it's DVD.
Messi, Pele.
Neither.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. That's an option always, right?
I mean, I should say Maradona or Pele.
Maybe neither.
All correct answers. All correct answers.
Yes or no, maybe. Strange.
Good answers. What else do we need to know about study abroad?
Well, we need to know that if you want to be a businessman like you are, you know, you have to start, you know, with a piece abroad, because it will shape you in ways that you cannot learn from the textbooks, right? And so
100%.
Yeah.
Business is so international these days.
Yeah, and then you would know that the best business decisions begin where your comfort zone ends. So you have to be willing to jump into that, into outside of your comfort zone. And it's not going to be pleasant.
Yeah.
That's why we work on discomfort now.
Right.
Let me say, it's okay to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We often are, more than you realize.
Yeah.
And we will help you navigate that, right?
Yeah.
And so, but even for business, I mean, you will make friends, you will network. There's things that cannot happen in the safety of your own textbook and laptop, right?
100%. 100%. I love that saying. That's fantastic.
I just have a question too about, because I experience this sometimes with my students as well when I'm teaching culture, whether it's national or organizational, sometimes just to get them to be curious about something instead of labeling it good or bad or right or wrong, just to be curious and ask why or how does this serve people?
Yeah.
Why do we do this? How do you see that mind shift kind of changing when students are abroad? Are there certain things that are done as part of preparing them through an orientation,
yes,
or even when they're there, to get them to be a little bit more curious about different global cultural aspects?
Right.
That maybe.
Yeah, that's a great, great question, Stephanie. And I think we prepare them.
Mm-hmm.
We give them some tools to reflect on. I think sometimes the simple thing: what happened? How did it make me feel?
Yeah.
What does it mean?
Yeah.
And if you use that simply just to say, oh, I didn't like this, well, stop.
Yeah.
Why did you not like it? What is that doing for you? And what do I learn? What do I take away from that? And so if you can instill in them a very simple mindset of being more reflective about the discomfort, then you develop that kind of curiosity that will be so helpful, right? And I think the faculty let do a lot of that, because then they talk about business practices and they talk about why they do things in a certain way. So you can be a great agent of transformation for your students. Just by facilitating those reflections, right? And so
I love that. I think that's just good life advice.
100%.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this touches on, I think we call it negation, presupposition, right? Your immediate assumption is that you don't assume someone has bad intent.
Right.
I'm reading a Jonathan Haidt book right now, and it tracks well. And I think it's a lot of what we do. I guess we broadly call it mission, but really, I mean, it's our duty as a university, right? The quote I like is, we're not here to make you feel comfortable. We're here to make you think.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But often it's also think about your own value. I mean, self-reflect, right? And so that makes it also very powerful. you realize, oh, not everybody looks the same or thinks the same or acts the same or makes decisions the same way or communicates in the same way. And so you develop a richness of flexibility, adaptability, communication skills that is extremely valuable for your life, right? For anything you do and your business, of course, your business life, your professional life, right?
Did you have an opportunity, did your team meet with the incoming president, Katia Passerini?
I did not, but I think some people, I haven't met her yet.
Yeah, I haven't met her yet either. I'm very optimistic and she seems fabulous.
I haven't,
If she spoke to Study Abroad or met with you guys.
I don't know. Not that I know of.
Okay.
I'm sure it's coming.
You and I weren't invited to the meeting. Is what it's like. They shielded the
rebels. Just in case we say things that are inappropriate.
Question two is just about any trends and differences you've seen pre-pandemic and post-pandemic when it's come to study abroad. Are we back to where we were before, or are there differences in how study abroad operates?
One of the things that I find most interesting is that when you visit some European universities, or for example, I set up a program in Roehampton in the UK, and they now have student support offices that provide mental health support because and they didn't used to. I mean, the assumption was if you're a European student, you're independent and you're on your own, right? Yeah. And I find it very interesting to see that there's a lot more awareness of the need to support, not only the need to support a student in a crisis, but also the need to guide students in their adaptation and their learning and their reflection, you know. So it's exciting to see that. That's something that I find really interesting about trends in study abroad, right? And I will also say that somehow with numbers, we are almost back to where we were before. But there's also an interesting trend in people withdrawing from programs, you know, because there's a lot less bandwidth for uncertainty and for discomfort, as I said earlier, forgive me for repeating that, but for, you know, and so immediately they think, oh, I cannot do this. I need to go home, right? And so.
So they're withdrawing during the program,
right when the program starts. They are there 2 days, 3 days, and then they say, I have to go home, right? And so we try to prevent that by offering tools and normalizing the discomfort, right? Yeah. And so, but that's not just for us, that we've seen more withdrawals than we used to, but nationwide it's a trend, so.
Makes sense.
Yeah. In our case, we also care deeply about the students, right? Mm-hmm. And so we also try to provide, we often speak to the parents, and that is not something that I did at my institution, at my public institution, right? But the parents call you and they want to know, you know, what are you going to do to protect my kids? And there's a lot more concern about violence and terror, and look at, well, DC, right, yesterday, no? But there's, you know, when I do a session for parents, I have about 500 parents who come, and we do two because it's too many people.
Yeah.
And many, many of the questions are, what do you do to make sure that my kid is going to come back, say, alive and well? And so that adds a lot of tension to the whole experience, and it requires a lot more willingness to engage with them, right? And I spoke for a half hour to a parent who was upset that the kid has to go do a fingerprint, you know, for a visa, right? And
that's just, I cannot change that.
And things change all the time. And we adapt. The word we learned from the pandemic, that was a post-pandemic word, pivot. That was one
pivot.
Part of my vocabulary before. And I think, you know, we have to constantly be, I always say, observing, paying attention, listening, being present to people, and then hear what they need. What do people need? What would help them have a successful experience without being overly protective, right? But sometimes you have to protect too, right? And you have to listen to a parent who's concerned, right? And so we do that. And sometimes, you know, it tends to be a lot, but it's part of who we are, you know, what makes us distinctive too. And all the faculty are fabulous here. So when they take a group abroad, they engage with the students. They're not just there teaching a class. So it's a major investment, and we really appreciate and value that.
I served in Peace Corps in the Republic of Georgia. Fabulous experience. Yeah. Great people. And we actually have a colleague from Georgia. Mm-hmm. And there's a point to this question, I promise, end of that intro.
Okay, yeah.
They, over there, when you order a pizza, they put mayonnaise on it, which I couldn't bring myself to taste it. I just would order it. Ooh, mayonnaise, which is just without mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise.
What was the most, I don't know, maybe shocking or when you came to the U.S.? And the reason I'm asking that is because there's going to be that experience. You're like, whoa, like, what, how is this? How are they doing this? Yeah. Like the amount of French fries we eat, like what?
That was part of our stereotype coming here.
Yeah, right.
They eat McDonald's and that's
I'm sure, yeah.
And that.
The fast food.
I think the way of relating, that was the toughest. And I remember when we started using, they started using computers for communications, like email, and I said, oh, these Americans, they're never going to know how to talk to you in your own, you know, face-to-face, yeah. And they're going to be writing you and pretending that that's friendship, right? You know? So adapting to those changes was quite interesting because we are very relational mm-hmm. people, right? And so when you tell me that's all there is, I don't like it, right? Yeah. I can't function well when I don't have a good network of people around me. So that was quite interesting. That was one of the biggest then. Shocks, so to say, you know, of living in America
and just Bloomington in general, I would imagine.
Yeah.
I have a friend from my PhD who is from Argentina as well, and she told me that was similar. Her biggest shock when she moved here was how people will walk and talk down the hall and not stop
and not
when they say hello, right? Yeah. And they'll just be like, oh, hey, good to see you. We should get together. And she would be like, great, when are we going to get together?
Yeah.
And I wanted to make plans. She didn't understand that was just a greeting and almost like an empty promise.
Yeah.
And kind of it didn't occur to me until it was reflected back and she had said that to me. I was like, that is very disingenuous to say to someone. And I do that all the time. Right. So, yeah.
You said it to me twice today.
I guess we better hang out.
But I will say that I am, as a good Argentinian that I am, I drink mate. That's my gourd with tea and all of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing more sad in life than not to have somebody to drink mate with on Sunday after a nap, right?
I have mate in my apartment. I should say mate. So, just for the listeners, we're not talking about like a
tea bag. Oh, yeah, no, not tea bag.
He wants to make sure you know he's authentic.
No, what's the cup?
The cup is also called mate.
The gourd.
Yeah.
And the straw. That has the filter, and there's you don't realize is there's a lot of caffeine in that loose.
There's a lot of caffeine.
It's like five cups of coffee.
But that's
like,
the greatest.
So you both can take your naps and then FaceTime each other.
And
then,
no today. FaceTime.
That's what I heard. No, okay.
We'll say I'll bring FaceTime.
Well, we could, but now I'm over it. But at the beginning, the first few years were tough. You know, like I said, oh, what kind of a life is this?
Not the
pandemic. When I first came to the U.S., then you get used to the pandemic too because it changed. You would never share a straw after the pandemic, right? Where the lack of physical contact is also also difficult. And I feel often I see students having a hard time relating to each other and they turn each other in and they report each other and they do all kinds of things that you think it's partly due to this fear of the other, fear of closeness, right? Feeling that, oh, they're going to invade my bubble, right?
Yeah.
And so, it's kind of interesting. And that's, I think we're still dealing with the post-pandemic effects in that regard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any summer travel plans?
Not yet.
Not yet? No.
Costa Rica.
Cool. Really?
I don't know. I was hopefully if I have, I'll have to see if it works.
Yeah. Spokane's not a bad place to be in summer, though. No. For sure.
Yeah.
So we can get more information at Gonzaga Study Abroad. Is that,
studyabroad.gonzaga.edu.
Okay.
You visit that and then we get you moving.
Then onward and upward from there on. So,
And what about for students who may be listening to this and there's not a program that they see listed that they want to go on, but some other place, what would be their next step? Would it be to reach out to your office?
Yes, of course. Okay. Yes. Yes, we often work, you know, sometimes as students, we don't like to promote this necessarily, but they work, they say, I want to do X and we don't have it. And so they decide to go independently. We still work with them and provide them insurance and support them. But we, you know, if we don't offer what you need, there are ways. There's always a way.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for hanging out with us today.
Of course. My pleasure. Yeah. Thank you for the invitation.
This podcast has been a production of the Gonzaga University School of Business. Your hosts were Stephanie Van Dellen and Andrew Brasich. Edited by yours truly, Stuart Herringer. Fiddle music by Dan Stewart.